Movie Mavericks.
The Movie Mavericks Podcast.
Movie Mavericks, speaking of fucking long, uncut European cocks.
The Movie Mavericks Podcast.
Now for your hosts, Jason and Trevor.
I can't wait.
Hey now, everybody. Welcome to episode 271 of the Movie Mavericks Podcast. I'm Trevor Anderson. I'll send you over to Jason Rugard. He's got a rundown for us.
Yeah, back this week with our normal format after our retrospective last week. We're doing that again here in the future, but today we get back down to business. We're doing the box office ace prediction game for Hot Pursuit, the D-Train, a little bit of trivia and a couple of debate conversation pieces in there. Trevor saw the IMAX laser projection, the only one in the country down there in LA. Saw Furious 7 on that. We're talking about that with him and his review of that, as well as Avengers, The Gambler, Hot Tub Time Machine 2, Foxcatcher, a whole bunch of stuff in there.
We
got a lot of trailers to go over as well, including the Red Band, R-rated trailer for Vacation, Magic Mike 2, Black Mass, The Last Witch Hunter, Chocolate City, and Playing It Cool. That's a big show.
Ooh.
That's a lot of stuff to cram in. But let's get into the cramming mood and get her done.
Helps if I turn the volume up. Here we go.
It will. You get in there.
It's not a question of enough, pal. It's a zero-sum game. Somebody wins, somebody loses.
Let's play the HSX.com box office prediction game.
Okay, let's
play. I think after 272 episodes, we'll get that down. So just one more. We'll get that whole slick volume thing down.
The D-Train.
What are we doing?
The D-Train. I don't know.
What is this movie about?
I don't know.
Is this a high school reunion movie?
Some sort of a D-Train. Yeah, it's a high school reunion movie.
The problem with this movie to
Jack Black and James Marsden.
Is that a lot of independent movies out right now that I want to see, including Danny Collins, Adult Beginners, and I think this gets lost in that shuffle because it doesn't look too...
I don't know if it gets lost, and it has... Probably better, bigger names.
Bigger names, although Marsden has headlined The Bomb, The Loft, which came out earlier this year, to no avail. I like Marsden, though, and I like Jack Black.
Well, so I really meant Jack Black, yeah.
I'd like to see this movie, but I don't think it's playing wide enough, so this is really barely limited.
So what are you saying? I'm saying 1.8 million.
I'm going 1.6.
There you go. If it does that, that'll be good. If it doesn't do that, I'm sorry. I don't know what to tell you.
The Hot Pursuit, though, is the big one. Because this is Sofia Vergara's supposed jump to the big screen and Reese Witherspoon helping her along. This is just
a Sandra Bullock vehicle, right, without Sandra Bullock.
Right, but the gags in it are falling flat because Vergara doesn't look old, and Witherspoon isn't ugly. Mm-hmm. So it's really out of proportion here of what I'm seeing on screen. It's just maybe on the paper it read a certain way, but it looks like it's bad. And I'm thinking Adam Sandler type bad, as in blended bad. So the opening, though, I think it's going to be a draw because I do think that counter programming is needed right now, especially with so many action oriented things out
Furious
there, including
7 and Avengers. Yeah.
Right, exactly. So there is some room for this to grow, but how big does it open? That's the question now.
I say 18.5.
My initial reaction was going to be in the 16 range because Witherspoon hasn't been that big of a draw, but I do think that people are going to come out and see this.
Neither is Sofia Vergara.
No, but maybe some of the female Hispanic fan base that made Jennifer Lopez into a star at one point might come out and support this because it's a light comedy and it's a female empowerment deal and the whole deal. So I'm saying 20, but just by a hair. Just by a hair.
Okay, well, that was a wonderful game.
Yeah, right? That's a big game this week. I still don't think that Avengers...
Guess what? The Avengers opened great. Okay.
What do you think, though, for a second weekend, just off the top of your head, for Avengers 2?
What, Avengers? I don't know. Yeah. Mid-80s?
You gonna go mid-80s? No way it hits 100?
I really doubt it.
I mean, a second weekend take of 100 million plus is unfreaking believable. But its midday numbers have been lagging or on par with what Furious 7 was pulling.
It's such a big number. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, I would go even lower, though. I'm saying 77 as a guess, just to, you know, for the number one for the weekend, which is absolutely astonishing. That it would be in the 300s after 2 weeks, but...
What was the fall off of the first one?
I think 50%, but at that point, I think it was still 103 million.
Yeah, it's 50%. So 50% would be, you know, mid-80s.
Yeah.
It did, what, 190, so.
Astronomical number. And you brought up the fact that it opened up so high. It had the second highest opening of all time.
Yeah.
But the trivia question this week is...
Uh-oh.
Yeah, well, that was my segue.
Trivia. Okay.
Wrote it right in.
What do you got?
I got this for you this week. How many movies have opened up in May that went on to become the highest grossing movie of that year? Now, obviously, The Avengers is one of them, the first one that is.
I don't know.
This is, and we're only going back to 83 because that's when they started really charting right. this kind of stuff. So what are we looking at, 32 years here?
It opened in May.
And do you wanna come back to this?
I guess. No, because how am I gonna get any closer?
I think you'd be surprised.
Really, big or small?
Well, I can't tell you that because I mean, if it's closer to your, I was surprised at least.
Okay, then I'll say 5.
It's 8, actually.
It's 8. Hmm.
But I was surprised because of the fact that May really wasn't the summer, really the start of summer season until 99. I mean, when they pushed the boundaries of this. And the first movie was Return of the Jedi, which was obviously a big summer blockbuster, but things rolled out slowly. Top Gun built its audience, become a number one hit. It didn't open up all that explosively. But, you know, when you start getting the likes of you know, like this Phantom Menace and Shrek and Star Wars 3 and things like that, Avengers obviously, things that are opening
that's all
up
just earlier. The last decade though,
right? Exactly. I mean, I remember when The Mummy came out, I think it was mid-May in 99, and people were talking about, oh, they're moving up that release date once again. And then you had Spider-Man, which is on this list as well, which did it May 2nd, and that kind of established that brand for a while. And then May 2nd was the coveted date and still is. And even you have Furious doing all the stuff in April now.
Yeah.
I mean, really.
Well, it had no choice.
Yeah. But I was surprised because I didn't think there would be 8. I thought there would be only a handful. So there you go. Nice, though. You're close this week.
It's just, I mean, April is just May's anal leakage, right?
Hey, I'm born in April. That's my birthday month. We're diamonds. We're diamonds, okay?
Yeah, you're diamonds, all right. Diamonds in the beehole.
We'll cut that anal. Let's cut through the anal and let's get to this debate topic because I want to know about this IMAX laser projection.
Yeah, so it's really cool. It looks really good. Basically, it's IMAX, but it's on real IMAX screens, so big 90-foot, you know, across screens.
And you say that in a sense.
Not for the like just the larger
not
theaters.
The XD or the Real D or any of these like large format premium theaters right now, but
right,
a true
exactly.
IMAX screen.
There's a lot of IMAX, you know, smaller screens. I guess this wouldn't scale to those. It'd be really expensive. So it'll be a while, but they'll have laser projectors for those size screens. Anyways, it will be brighter, but they won't look as good as this. But it looks really amazing. I mean, the blacks are crystal black. I mean, just like no light whatsoever out of it. So the contrast on it's phenomenon. And it's just super sharp. It was really incredible. It's like looking at a 4K TV, you know, where you can literally see individual hairs and things from real 4K content up on a 90-foot screen. You can still see individual hairs and the stubble on people's faces. It's incredible.
So it's worth getting out and seeing a movie in this laser projection if you get a chance to.
Yeah, I would say so, definitely. Although, you know, I saw Furious 7 in it. You know, it didn't save that movie. I saw Avengers normally and loved it to death. You know, so it's not a big enough jump to where I'd start paying, you know, $20 a ticket for every movie.
What's interesting, though, is that you saw Furious 7 in an IMAX laser projection. I saw it in a D-Box moving seat, and yet we still kind of had the same reaction to the movie, it sounds like, you know? So, but the thing is that we're getting different experiences viewing it. It no longer is the case that you go to a movie theater, you see it one way. It doesn't become standard until you get it at
3D,
home, really.
3D, 2D, large format, yeah.
Right, you know? Yeah. And then the effect of the Lord of the Rings movies, you throw in the high frame rate stuff, and there's even more variables.
Well, this, I mean, to me, the thing to do would be to get something similar to this system, you know, something with a high dynamic range, So you got like a wide contrast on it. Running 48 frames per second. You don't even need the 3D. It's running, you know, 4K. If this has a, kind of a trick with resolution to make it even seem even higher resolution than that, but just that alone would make it look real. You wouldn't even need 3D.
Yeah, I know what you mean, because some things are so clear they almost look three-dimensional.
This movie was almost like that. One thing that, you know, it's so sharp that you notice the 24 frames per second on this. Like, you can see the film judder, you know, in movement and things. So it's almost like it's so clear in one way that they've added this resolution, and they really need that temporal resolution now with the 48 frames per second to kind of fill it in. And it would look, as much as I still think high frame rate looks weird, I'm pretty sure I'd get used to it, and it would look super real.
Yeah, I can't wait to see it. And I know there's only one screen in the country that's down by you. You made a journey to go see this. Now, was it packed in there? Was there a lot of people for this showing?
Yeah, well, it was a Simpty showing, so it was it's not a Hollywood thing necessarily, but it was it was a special screening.
Yeah.
To show it off.
Freaking awesome. Freaking awesome.
It was very cool. They're shooting the next two Avengers movies are being shot all on the new Arri IMAX cameras. So those are all gonna be full, you know, beginning to end IMAX movies. And I imagine specifically and especially for this, you know, laser type screen, which they're going to start rolling out nationwide here pretty soon, I imagine. To only the large format, though, to the really big screens. I think they've got worldwide like 72 or something that they've nailed down. So we'll see it expand. I don't know if you have a big one.
I do. I have a big one, my friend. Away. You can ask around.
But you got a big one?
Yeah.
If you do, and when they install it, go, you know, take the trip to go see it. Because it's worth, if you're, you know, into movies at all, it's worth going to see the future of what's going to come.
You heard it right there. Trevor says everyone should come far and wide and see my big one. And check out the movie on the IMAX screen. Yes, there is one in a couple cities away here, but I would definitely make the trip to go over there and see something on this, especially but the thing is, even the presentation won't save a shit movie is the problem.
Yeah, it doesn't.
They need things that are going to match the presentation. So
yeah,
let's move on and talk about Super Troopers, which recently was talked about getting funded for a sequel. I guess it went on Kickstarter or something of the like and raised $4 million from loyal fans for a sequel, because everyone's just clamoring for a sequel.
For loyal fans, that's all Casper Van Dien.
I know, right? Super Troopers. I meant Starship Troopers.
I know, you meant Starship Troopers. I heard that, but I wasn't sure.
Well, you know what really fucked me up on that was that I have the TV is muted in the background here, and it's playing Super Troopers on Comedy Central. And I, you know, it caught me off guard there, so excuse me. Yeah, Casper Van Dien is probably a bigger Super Troopers fan than Starship Troopers at this point, but he is leading the charge to have this go to the small screen, and that's maybe not a bad idea for this universe and the different angles they could take here, with maybe setting something in the recruitment angle or in the actual war.
I mean, sci-fi would probably buy it right up.
Right? This is ideal.
How do they, I mean, who has the rights to this? How are they, I mean, who's crowdfunding what on this?
I'm not sure who's crowdfunding this. I believe it was to even get the goddamn pilot shot. Or some sort of fan-made pilot. Somebody is leading the charge on this, and I want to say this was an older article. Mm-hmm. I forget, you know, we're not very well researched on this one. But That's how we're rolling here. To be honest, this was a news item we were supposed to do 2 weeks ago, and it caught me off guard. I'm still trying to think about why it's not Super Troopers.
But I still think it would be a good idea. I mean, I'm be intrigued to watch. I don't know if it would have to be obviously good.
Well, they could set it, like I said, either in the war, at the military camp, or at the high school. So they could do many different settings on this. Mm-hmm. And I would be willing to watch. I say that now, but I mean, even Daredevil, everyone tells me is great. I haven't sat down to watch it yet. Are you watching?
I find it hard to watch. Daredevil, I don't think is as good as everyone's saying. I've seen two episodes and I'm already kind of, I'm done. I've seen it already.
The problem with this is that I got Gotham I'm working through, and I got The Flash.
Gotham's a chore, true. Oh.
Okay, and so I just really don't need another. And this is, everyone's telling me to watch Daredevil. I mean, I watched 200 episodes of Smallville, and everyone laughed at me for years. And now people are telling me to watch a superhero show. I'm fucking amazed. I mean, I guess superhero shows come into my fucking ears. So yeah,
I watch Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and that's pretty much, that's where I stand. I'm good.
I'd rather watch Coach.
Coach is good. Don't you make a joke out of Coach.
Oh, next you're going to tell me Wings is quality.
Yeah, I like Wings too.
Oh my God. you have a USA Day programming circa 1997.
Holy shit. That was awesome. I wish they would put that back on there. Oh, that and Up All Night. Shalhoub, okay. I was good on USA.
Yeah. unless maybe some Jag reruns. But
I never watched Jag.
I'm tripping myself out here. Jag. Let's be honest. Jag is basically A Few Good Men that they converted into a television series without ever saying it was A Few Good Men.
It ran forever, so.
It spun off.
I can't really. It's hard to make fun of it because it's wildly successful.
Wildly successful, but that is based on A Few Good Men, which everyone seems to forget in the translation. In the first few episodes, I remember watching it when it first premiered 100 years ago, and they ripped stock footage from Clear and Present Danger. And I remember watching it, that's clearly Clear and Present Danger.
But is it dangerously Clear and Present Danger?
Oh. Well, if it was in the past, it was not presently clear.
It's clearly and dangerously Clear and Present Danger.
Oh, okay. My brain is fucking melting.
We're getting in big trouble here, and I heard you got in big trouble as well.
I did. Last night I got in a little bit of trouble, but I was in China, in Little China at least. And I went and saw Big Trouble in Little China on the revival circuit. It was playing at the Regal down here, or the Century, I should say, excuse me, which does the big screen revival. And I'm always complaining they don't play something contemporary. They finally did, and it was
Do you consider Big Trouble in Little China contemporary?
Well, compared to The Sound of Music and West Side Story, yeah, I'm stoked. It was really nice to see it on the big screen. I was telling you this off air that it didn't have the pristine quality of something that looked like it was HD. Mm-hmm. Upkicked. I'm sure it wasn't a print that they were importing in, but it had a lot of dirt on it and no artifacts, no cigarette burns, but it looked like it was from the 80s and played like gangbusters on the big screen, although I have to admit that it did not have much of a story, which you and I were cracking up about, which was really evident. I could see why critics were just probably dumbfounded when they first saw it. They probably were expecting some sort of Raiders of the Lost Ark thing, and they got this.
Well, but that's
strange comedy special effects.
Yeah, that's half the point of it, right? It doesn't have a story. It's almost kind of making fun of that kind of stuff. And he's such a bumbling idiot hero who really doesn't do anything.
Yeah, he's convinced of his own superiority, and he's absolutely in over his head at every moment, and he's the least in on it. There is a lot of special effects, and I guess I didn't really call how many special effects sequences there are. But when you watch on the big screen, you go, "Oh yeah, there's another thing going on there, and there's some shit going on here, and there's a lot of stuff going on in that movie visually." But Carpenter's score really kicks in the big screen, and Kurt Russell in maybe his most iconic role. I mean, I would have loved to have seen. I'm glad I saw this, but I equally would like to have seen Escape from New York on the big screen, because that's one of my favorites of all time. Mm-hmm. Especially with that music, because the Carpenter score played great in a theater. It's something about it. It's so electric and sounds so 80s. It just makes you happy to be watching these movies. So I don't know. I'm happy it was back on the screen, and I welcome them to keep doing this. Please, movies from the 80s and 90s next. Stop going back to the 50s. I just imagine that everybody that's wanted to see those has already seen those, right? I mean, they keep doing the same.
I mean, everyone's already seen Big Trouble in Little China.
Rear Window, the same ones. If you've had your chance to see them on the big screen. I saw Gladiator last year. It was great on the big screen.
Yeah.
I mean, these are movies
that I remember seeing that on the big screen.
me as well. But I mean, at least we're in the same ballpark here. I mean, the next they're playing Full Metal Jacket, which I got to admit, like I was telling you, I'm not dying to see that on a big screen for whatever reason. But you know, Top Gun's a step in the right direction and things like that. So,
well, they already had the re-release Top Gun.
They 3D. Did, but they never would have released that on this revival circuit.
Yeah,
maybe it's,
I don't know.
Maybe it's too expensive to get these things, the rights to these. But there's a couple I'd love to see.
Well, it depends on, I don't know who the audience is for these things. Obviously, it's older people, so maybe. maybe you're not old enough yet.
I'll tell you this, though. It was packed in there. And the fact that this one skewed probably the youngest out of all the demographics, the one they have on there, says something for that. So keep giving us the programming.
Well, when they start playing the Missing in Action movies, I'll pay attention. Hey, those are American movie classics, and I have proof they were on AMC.
Oh, good. I know AMC has really started to scrape the bottom of the barrel, aren't they? There's a lot of shit on AMC that I just kind of go, huh, we're already calling that one a classic?
Hell, you're throwing, yeah.
You're throwing Troy on AMC already? Okay. It's a bit of a stretch.
She's a classic.
She's a classer. So you see this thing on the internet?
What internet?
Exactly. The fuck is the internet? this Man of Steel thing. This whole color.
Yeah, if it was in color.
I like this comparison.
I thought they were talking like if Superman was black.
Yeah, right, if he had some color to him. No, they're talking about visually. If Zack Snyder had not darkened and
done the Christopher Nolan look?
Yeah, had gone so dark, because there were set pictures that suggested that that your boy Henry Cavill here was wearing a bright blue suit. And then we saw the movie, and it looked like he was the Bat Superman from Part 3 that had gone through the oil slick. I mean, somebody took the time to go back and, what, recolorize the frames of certain parts of this movie?
I guess it's like a little treatment thing to show you what it would look like. Yeah, it's available on the internet. It went around. I mean, people are probably fairly familiar with this. It made the rounds, but it doesn't necessarily look very good.
I think it looks much better, though.
It's way oversaturated. I don't know whoever did this. It doesn't give you a good idea of what it would look like if it had actual color, I don't think.
I think that it looks at least closer to the Superman films I saw when I was a kid, which I like, which I think was the whole point of this. This looks at least like Superman is supposed to look and not like Nolan's Batman.
But it doesn't – I mean, it doesn't matter, because it doesn't go along with the movie. So it doesn't – the color decision they made fit what they shot. I still think, I mean, the Nolan, it's a Nolan-esque movie. It's not a Superman like from before. So change the color all you want. Make it black and white. And it doesn't change it to me.
I think
anyways.
That this
I,
at
I
least,
need a different movie.
Yeah, well, that's one problem with this too. And the original movie looked so lacking of joy and visually that it got boring to look at it. Long stretches.
Was lacking in joy story wise as well.
I mean, just visually had no punch. I would take the look of the Singer movie because of the fact that the colors were, you know, he flew in a blue sky. You know, he didn't fly in some sort of overcast bullshit. You know, it just matches moody mood. It was this blue, beautiful sky. And
that's
he chose
what I
him.
Mean. It fits. It was an intentional decision to have the colors desaturated the way that they were, because it fit the movie, and it does fit the movie.
Which looks like it's the same decision being made on this upcoming sequel.
That's fine with me, but I mean, I would much rather have a different movie. You're not just going to make it suddenly put it in color, right? And it's going to be a better movie.
Well, you and I just both watched The Green Lantern this week, speaking of, which is the only other DC Warner Brothers movie that they've made from the time that Superman Returns was made to Man of Steel. So you can see...
Well, aside from the Batman movies, obviously.
Right, aside of the Batman movies. Right. But you can see that they really are going against what the Green Lantern did, because Green Lantern is very colorful and
which I still
cheery.
Think... Will you agree with me at least at this point? The Green Lantern, the story they told is not worth telling, fine. But it's at least put together decently enough, and it looks good. Like, I want to like that movie so much.
I always say it to you. It's one of my guilty pleasures.
Yeah, it's really, it's not necessarily told in a bad way. If they had just picked a better story to tell, it would have been a good movie. Like, they almost had something there.
And special
but
effects
like
aren't
they
bad
gave
either.
Up too quick. Yeah, I like special effects.
I like it because it's got a great score. B, the special effects are cool, and it's so outlandish, you know, the world that it's on, and then the whole Green Lantern universe in itself that was created by DC is so weird that it lends itself to the cinematic.
It's just not written things. Very well.
Yeah, it's just not written very well, but that's just, it's got to be a hard nut to crack anyways, because that's such a bizarre character and storyline, you know, with the
I don't
Guardians.
Know that it is. I mean, I disagree. I mean, I think they spent too much time on him as a little kid setting that. They set a lot of things up, and they do it. They miss all the moments, you know, that you normally would get. I don't know. It's one thing watching Joss Whedon's work and seeing all those moments and being like, oh my God, this is a great movie because it has these moments in it that are constantly happening. And Green Lantern has damn near zero moments and has a couple of them, but most of the time it's just, you know, let's get this information across and move on to the next thing.
Right. Because there's so much information to get across in that movie. Because there's a lot of shit going on with the backstory.
There's a lot of weird stuff. How does he know when he goes and gives his speech in front of the elder guys to not use fear, to not use the yellow ring? How the fuck does he even know all that shit? Like, because he literally just walks in there and goes, Don't use yellow. When you use fear, this and that. It's like, where'd you come from to even know that shit?
You
shouldn't know anything.
Out. We are movie nerding out, but I can even say this. I would pick Green Lantern over Iron Man 3 anytime to watch.
I like it better than that.
Iron Man 3 is lumbering and self-conscious and represents to me all the things wrong with Phase 2 right now, but I haven't seen Avengers, so.
Avengers is really good.
All right. Let's take a quick break and let's come back with Trevor's review of The Avengers Age of Ultron.
Proud member of the LAM Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.
Brings the popcorn. She brings the roses. Subject Cinema. A tasty new film topic each week with a side order of film reviews.
Yum.
T.C. Kirkham.
Ba-dum-ching.
Kim Brown.
What?
Over 500,000 listeners, and you could be the next one. SubjectCinema.com. Real movies for real people.
Well, welcome back to Movie Mavericks, fake movies for fake people.
Trevor brings the Blu-ray, I bring the pot, we have a party. Yeah. Speaking of that last Man of Steel clip, if you haven't seen the video for that, we do have it posted on the podcast page at moviemavericks.com. So go over there and check out the video. It's a short little video that these guys constructed. And well done. So, my man, what is going on with the Avengers?
Oh, my God. So this movie's really good. Not as good as the first one.
But what is as good as the first? That's a rarity that the first one was so good.
Well, the first one, you know, you had, you know, this is a sequel. So it's not all the storylines coming together. It's not, you know, it just doesn't have that same impact, I guess, of the first
one. Freshness. Okay.
Yeah. What makes this straight up sequel?
Why is this better than the backlash suggests?
Kind of a standalone movie. It's really only good because of Joss Whedon.
That means the writing is really good.
The writing's on par here, man. Easily on par with the first one.
For setups and payoffs?
Setups and payoffs galore. Brilliant in here. Things that Whedon's just a fucking god of writing, you know? And I don't often say that, but it's true. And then you watch this and you think, man, this is fucking dumb. I don't like this. And then he turns it around on you. And yet they eat your words, you know, and your thoughts on it.
Which is why I watched like 5 seasons of Buffy, because the shit is constantly clever.
Yeah.
So I get you.
So I worry where, you know, Marvel goes without him. But he's able to take this sprawling action movie with so many damn characters again and give everyone equal share. And really make you, like I say, give you those moments, give you those character moments where you kind of, I for one care about like all these characters because of him. So I don't know, but I really liked it. I enjoyed it. It's kind of a one-off thing, you know, so it's not as good as the first one, but it is big still. It's as big as the first one.
I haven't seen it yet, so don't spoil too much for me, but I'm hearing that there's some complaints about Hawkeye going back to his childhood.
You know what? Yeah, there's that. I mean, people complained about both of the SHIELD agents, him and Black Widow about their getting them getting kind of a side story. She has kind of a love story that's obvious. It carries on for the first one,
right?
But yeah, his whole backstory thing fits into the plot. Like, it's part of the movement, the natural progression of the plot. It's not, they didn't stop to waste time on Hawkeye. It's like, it's more of a calm down moment. Everyone is there. It's not just him, you know? And so I disagree with that completely.
Special effects wise, out of the park.
Yeah. Great. One of the complaints is Ultron's mouth moves. Well, guess what? That's all James Spader, man. You can see it. It's brilliant James Spader facial acting, you know? So yes, of course his mouth moves. It's far more impactful.
Good. I'm glad to hear that. Did you see this in 3D or is this 2D?
I saw it in 3D.
3D worth it? Because I know you're not a big 3D guy.
Yeah, it looked fine. 3D now is fine. I don't knock it anymore. There was a time when it was shit, but it looks just fine now.
This is no Clash of the Titans type 3D.
Right, yeah. There was a time when, yeah, you wouldn't want it, but perfectly fine.
Is the length problem on this?
No, I was actually shorter than I expected, so.
So why isn't it as good as the first one then? Because you're making it sound like it's as good as the first.
Well, that's what I mean. It is. It's on par with the first, but it's not. It doesn't have the same impact as the first one, because the first one came as a convergence from all of those storylines, right? And all those characters coming together for the first time. Now that you're there and you have this, this is just a continuation. This is just a sequel. It's a one-off sequel. So it doesn't
have
that same impact.
I like Loki so much, though.
He's not in this, right?
I'm afraid that Ultron isn't going to be able to live up to the expectation.
He doesn't quite. He's different. He's much like Loki's like the Joker, and Ultron is like Bane. You know, he doesn't quite live up, but in his own right, he's a damn good evil bad guy, you know.
See, to me, Loki would be Hans Gruber. And so I need to know where Ultron's stacking up. Like, is it Die Hard with a Vengeance, Hans Gruber's cousin? Is it the bad guy?
Well, I gave you the Batman analogy. You want something else?
Because to me, it's just like, I got to know if there's going to be a set. Because the problem with the Die Hard movies is that they never really had a villain that could match up to that again.
Well, he matches up to it. I mean, that's the problem with this. It's a one-off, spin-off thing. Like, Ultron, obviously they create Ultron. So it's kind of like, the movie kind of exists just to exist almost in a way, you know? Almost to twiddle your thumbs. In a sense, you know, as you're waiting for Civil War or, you know, Infinity Wars, you know, for the other things to actually happen.
Well, my last question is, I've heard a couple people bitch and moan that the Hulk still doesn't look right CG-wise.
I thought he looked fine. He looks exactly the same as before.
Okay. I thought they nailed it before. And Ruffalo is the greatest come up for them. I loved
the facial features in it. Yeah. He's great in it. They use Bruce Banner quite a bit in this movie again. Everyone gets their fair share, like I say. I like it a lot. The ending, they set up for the next Captain America. So it plays nicely. You know, the S.H.I.E.L.D., the Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. TV show play into this was kind of stupid. I won't ruin it, but it was kind of dumb. But everything's still connected, you know, in some way.
All right, so you're highly recommending it.
I highly recommend it. I will buy this when this comes out, and I will watch Avengers and Avengers Age of Ultron in one sitting when this comes out on Blu-ray.
I just watched the original the other night in anticipation of seeing this. I've been watching this Phase 2 movement, so I watched Iron Man 3, and I watched the Avengers, and man, first of all, the Avengers looks beautiful on this Blu-ray high frame rate shit. And second of all, the writing is just, you could just, the scenes, the beautifully way it's crafted in and out of scenes. So if Whedon can do that again, he doesn't write himself into holes. And right when you think he's hitting boredom, he switches things on
he
you.
He does.
And
just, I mean, Loki, like you say, Loki was such a good bad guy because you got such great moments out of him with the other characters, and plus being Thor's brother, you know, all that kind of stuff. Ultron obviously is incapable of filling that same
right
role, you know, so yeah.
All right, so you saw The Gambler. You caught up with this one. This one I gave a very high review to back in December, and high I mean as in high star review to that. So
I think you reviewed it when you were high.
What do you think?
Yeah, I really liked it. I thought it was very good. This character, this Jim Bennett character that he's playing, I mean, forget everything you've ever heard about anti-heroes. This dude is the fucking anti-hero, man.
He hates himself, does he not?
Holy shit, he hates himself. He hates everyone, which is why the ending, I think, feels false to me.
As well. I think even the music selection is wrong there. Are you talking about the scene where he's running down the street and whatnot? Yeah, I think so, too.
That whole thing felt false to me because they didn't, you know, him and the girl, they didn't really...
They didn't have a connection like that, but there's a scene. There's multiple scenes in that movie that are very good. John Goodman delivers a great, great supporting performance in that.
The movie's funny. You know, the dialogue's really good.
But the scene that Wahlberg really, I thought, killed it in that movie was when he talks about talent in his classroom and he picks out the one girl who's got the talent. That's a great scene.
I would agree if it wasn't too long.
You think it went on too long?
Oh, way too long. I mean, there's a lot of philosophy in this movie that maybe is a bit too much for it. You know, I mean, it's unnecessary. But right. You're right. I mean, that's great and all, but he's not the talent thing, the genius thing. He's none of those. He openly admits to it. But I don't know how that, I still don't understand how it plays into the gambling. Because the way he gambles is talentless. He just plays till he loses.
He hates himself. I mean, that movie was so hard to watch because of what he was doing to himself and the relationship.
I know you hate him. You hate that character. Right. I literally hate that character.
It's hard to spend that much time, especially with an actor that I typically like. It was hard to spend that much time with that person. But
a great movie. I think it had the wrong ending. I think it pushed out there in the end. And it really,
I think there was some rewriting going on at the 11th hour there.
But I really loved the whole, the 7 days left. Because you got to pay. He owes like... you know, $210,000 basically. Yeah, $260,000 to two different guys at the end of the movie. It's three, right? And so it's just a countdown. And you know, the dude wants his money in 7 days, and it's basically a countdown movie where he's trying to raise the money. Maybe, I don't know. You know, he is the gambler.
Gets, you know, then he gets money from a family member, and it's like, oh god, just fucking pay the debt. You know, like don't get yourself in more situation.
But he just doesn't care.
I love how Goodman has that speech about crazy. Fuck you money, you know, great dialogue in that movie in a lot of areas. But Goodman really, I thought could have used even bigger of a role in it, but maybe not. Maybe they just used him just right. Cause when he was on screen, it was impactful.
Yeah.
I'm glad you liked that one too.
Good movie.
Well, I saw Hot Tub Time Machine 2, which got absolutely lambasted in the theaters this last February, and rightly so. This is a paper-thin, plotted movie. This movie really is going to turn off a lot of people because it really is about Rob Corddry's penis. He gets shot in the dick at a party where he lives in this alternate universe where he is Lou from the first one, but he's created Lugal. Which is obviously Google. he's this guy, rock guard. He dresses like Axl Rose circa 1990. Craig Robertson, is it Robinson? Robinson from...
Robinson.
Yeah, the first one, which I really like, is now a singer who's pretty much saying everyone's hits, from Lisa Loeb to Nirvana, which everyone's seen from the preview. And their kid is in it as well, the heavyset kid who now is like in the future is some sort of billionaire heir. But the problem with this movie is that... It has so much that it throws at you that it doesn't really have any identity. And this movie just kind of has sketches. It's almost like watching a Saturday Night Live episode with these same characters. And they don't time travel except for to go back in the past. So, or they're in the future. I'm sorry. They're in 2025, but it looks like 2015 basically without sometimes minor changes. And they stay there. They don't go anywhere else, so I thought they were going to be jumping all around from the preview that it showed me.
Yeah, it shows them going way back in time.
And there is some really offensive humor in there, and a couple of scenes that go way too far, but I have to admit, I laughed very hard a couple times too. So I want to slam this movie because it's like bottom of the barrel in a lot of respects, but I have to admit the goodwill built up by the three main characters, because I like them so much, made me laugh out loud multiple times. So I'm going to embarrassingly give this one a recommendation.
So, but not as good as the first.
Nowhere near as good as the first, especially not from a story-wise, from a sentimentality, all that kind of stuff. But you know, I thought the first one was just kind of sweet too in a lot of ways and funny and just but this one is just is gross out funny, but you'll see. And it just centers around Cordy's penis. But and you'll see if you see this.
I will see it.
I can't wait till you do, because I want to talk about this further with you when you do.
You want to talk about his penis?
Yeah. Let's talk about this Furious 7. Speaking of penises, Furious 7.
Furious 7. I almost don't want to talk about it because everyone seems to like it so much, but I hated this movie.
Hated? It's a strong word.
I hated it. Strong word. It's a piece of crap. It really is. There's no story. James Wan is a poor man's Justin Lin.
Yeah, there is a step down in quality there.
Oh, my God. A horrible step down in quality. It's just dumb. It's just, you sit and you watch this movie, and after having read all these horrible reviews and a lot of them spelling out, you know, step by step, the stupidity of this entire plot. And I didn't believe it. I didn't want to believe it. But watching it and thinking back on this, it's almost heartbreaking to watch it and think, oh, my God, it's really that dumb. It's literally that stupid. I've never seen someone chasing them. You know, chasing them. They're chasing the person chasing them. They continually collide, but they never stop to actually do anything about it. It makes no sense.
Well, the movie doesn't make sense at all.
But they need
the
to
fact
get
that they wrote
stuff
themselves into corners. How many times can you see them play chicken? The second time I watched this, I'm like, wow, they really have written themselves.
Oh, the whole movie is just a one big corner. I was also promised that Paul Walker was in this movie. He was not in this movie.
I said that to you originally. Is he not oddly
he
in the
shows
back of a
up
lot of shots?
Oh, my God. And he laughs here and there. They have these weird cuts to him looking at people and looking right this way and that way. You just think, holy shit, that is
cut in
there. Like, yeah. You're forcing him to be in this scene. He like shows up late to shit, and he's like, "What the fuck is going on?"
Well, in the other movies, he would stand like right next to Vin Diesel, and in this one, you know, obviously because of the circumstances, they had the body doubles or whoever, him like in the back left corner.
It's just weird.
So he's kind of there, but tell me that the whole
he's not there
40 minutes that they go to the Middle East isn't just superfluous. You're like, why is this in here?
But he shows up, right? The guy that's chasing them shows up everywhere they go. They're going to the Middle East to get something to help them find this guy. He shows up. They don't try to get him. They're trying to get him. They don't try to get him. They try to continue to get the thing that they need to get to get him. It's like, no, he's there. He's right there. And he doesn't do anything ever. He just kind of toys with them. You think, well, nobody's fucking serious in this movie.
Well, somebody gets some serious shit going on here.
Why were you not? Yeah, he showed up at like the, you know, the beginning of the movie. He shows up at the Rock's computer to hunt them down. It's like, well, you're there. They'll come to you. You know, we can have this fucking fight. This movie can be over in like 5-10 minutes.
Oh, hell no! They got to fucking stretch it on for their two hours.
That's why
and 30
it's horrible.
Minutes.
I will the ending. You know, the Paul Walker
tribute
goodbye. Basically. Yeah, was very nice.
It was handled well.
I'll give them that much. And I really loved the two cars driving off on separate roads. Like, the imagery there was very nice. That was that was really good. Aside from that, I don't know what the hell I would possibly get out of this movie.
I thought this was the weakest in a long time for the series.
It's probably might be the worst. I really prefer the second one to this.
Ooh.
And that's saying a lot. But that is at least tries to be a real movie. This is just a series of trailer moments, right? Like, there's no dialogue in this fucking movie. There's just like trailer dialogue where they say a line of something that would go in the trailer, and then there's an action sequence. It's like, what?
I don't got friends, I got family.
Yeah,
That's the worst. And where the fuck is The Rock in this movie?
I hated this thing.
He's gone most of the
time. He's sitting it out. Yeah.
Let's move on. Let's talk about Foxcatcher briefly here. This was up for a lot of Academy Awards last Christmas. I saw this recently. Really downbeat movie from Bennett Miller. It features some great acting from Carol Ruffalo and Channing Tatum as the Schultz brothers, Mark and Dave Schultz. This is about John DuPont murdering the brother. And really, this movie's missing something. I'm telling you, it's got great acting. It's got a really strange, foreboding kind of feel to it, but it's missing something. And I can't tell if it's because Ruffalo is the more magnetic presence, because his character is the more likable, just like in real life, was the more likable one of the two. And I feel like the filmmakers maybe missed an opportunity to look at that guy's life and focus on him a little bit more and make it more of a tragedy as opposed to the brother that is not very interesting. And the character you want to be following, you only see peripherally or in scenes from here to there. So I found it kind of a frustrating experience. It's undoubtedly well filmed and written and whatnot and acted, but I just think they missed the boat. And I felt like they told the wrong story, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
All right, enough on that. Let's move on and talk about Left Behind, because I'm dying to hear about this Nicolas Cage Apocalypse remake.
So this is Kirk Cameron obviously made, you know, three of these.
Obviously.
And these are books as well. But it's just Left Behind. It's what do you call this?
This is like,
what is this? Has a name. Oh, God, I can't think of it now. Anyhow, it's like the apocalypse, but yeah. You know, it's a biblical apocalypse.
It's a rapture type deal.
Thank you, rapture. Yeah, that's exactly what I was trying to say. So it's the rapture, yeah. So, you know, the good people are taken away, people who believe in God and who've given themselves over to him, disappear. And, people like Nicolas Cage are left behind.
And this is on the airplane.
Yeah, and he's on the airplane.
He's flying.
So what this movie really is, it is an airplane disaster movie. And that's it.
Is it a good airplane disaster
movie? No, it's a horrible movie. It's just full of like, oh, and God, and, you know, believe in God.
Well, how's Cage?
And people saying, I don't believe in God, you're wrong. And the other people are like, but we do believe in God, and we know we're right. And then, of course, they are right because it's a movie. So like they can be whatever they want. And he's fun. He's Nicolas Cage.
He's like, it kind of looks like
fly this plane.
Do you remember Knowing?
I mean, way less action, you know, in a sense.
It just looked cheap. The trailer looked cheap.
That's what I mean. No, it is cheap. There's not a lot to it.
It just looked cheap. It looked like a.
Well, you should have a bit of a problem with the religious message. I don't care which religion it is, but it's a bit much to have constantly jammed down your throat watching the movie. Because that's all it is. That's the whole point of it, right? The point of it isn't to tell an interesting story. And clearly, watch this movie, you know, it's anything but interesting or good.
Which is what I felt about the movie you're about to review, Interstellar.
Yeah, Interstellar. Okay, so this is talking about a long fucking movie.
Oh my god.
This thing's a fucking killer.
Oh my god.
I mean, Christopher Nolan, as always, is incredibly heavy-handed, and this is the same deal as that. I have such a complaint of that because it just feels like you've been hit over the head with a hammer. But more importantly, this movie doesn't explain anything, nor does it try. You know, for something that's trying to be so intelligent, how you have like these time loops with no entry, you know, they don't make any sense. None of it makes sense, actually, really.
I thought this, makes first no of sense. All, this movie to me was more interesting when it was on the ground. The second they went into, I was more interesting with the famine and the family problems and the fights at school and the fact that he had to be a farmer and he didn't want to be a farmer. I thought that was all interesting. They go to space, and I'm thinking,
but why?
You know, I liked when him and his daughter were discovering the NASA thing.
You like that here? No, yeah, that's no, that this was is one a of the movie dumbest
about
parts,
fathers
man.
And daughters. This is they, fathers and daughters.
Yeah,
is
I
it
know.
Not everybody that had?
Of course,
Michael Caine has a problem with his daughter, and then you got the father John Lithgow who misses his daughter. Matthew McConaughey misses his daughter. All I saw in this was a father daughter movie.
Well, poor
space.
Casey Affleck. No one gives a shit about him.
And I like Casey Affleck. And I was why was his character
when he goes five? Back? He doesn't even. He goes, is she still alive? He doesn't give a fuck about his son. It's like, damn, man.
Why was he so vilified in the end there? And why was he such
they
a monster?
Hated him.
I hated that sequence where he's out in the field fighting a fire.
They go to NASA, right? And Michael Caine's like, basically, they're like, we have no pilot, but you're the best damn pilot there ever was. will you pilot our giant spaceship we've been building in secret underground? And it's like the dude lived like what, like 20 miles away from fucking that. Like your assholes couldn't drive over there. You didn't know he was there.
You had to wait for his daughter to break the Morse code.
Yeah, he had to wait for him to fucking tell himself to go there. It doesn't. It's like what? Fucking
mocking,
retarded.
But let me. It has great special effects and it has a fantastic score by Hans Zimmer. I think a great, if not the
best. It does
have
best. A very good score. Yeah.
I hate Anne Hathaway. It's been known. I'm willing to fight her on the air. Or lip sync battle.
I'll watch that.
But my thing is, this movie had too many close-ups of people crying after the third time of seeing somebody weep. And the Matt Damon cameo, if you haven't seen it now, spoiler, okay? You've had enough time. Was not all that great to me. I didn't find those sequences all that thrilling. In fact, I thought when he went to the planets, the movie kind of lost itself for a while there on each planet. Yeah. So, or each new environment.
It was a dumb movie. Sorry to let everyone know that, but it was.
I wouldn't say dumb. I would just say heavy-handed, like you said.
It was dumb.
I would put it on the same realm as Gone Girl.
Tries to be smart, but it's not. Right? I mean, we could unravel it if you want to, because it's got a couple time loops in it that don't make any sense. It's a dumb movie. It's literally dumb. It doesn't even try to be smart, because it doesn't even explain anything to you. And I'm sure there are people who are going to dig into it and be like, oh, no, it's this, this, and that. But no, it's not.
I just didn't care for it on a reactionary level.
I don't like Christopher Nolan. We got problems.
We got some problems over here.
I don't like it.
Well, now I'm going to talk well about a movie that's a B movie, and people are going to go, oh, how did you guys shit on Interstellar?
Oh, what the fuck?
Tell me.
What the fuck is this bullshit?
Worth the shit.
What is this, Wesley Snipes fucking movie?
This Wesley Snipes movie is worth the shit. And I'm going to tell you why. Because it's got a good plot. It's shot fantastic. Its movie is beautifully shot. He's not a vampire. This is not a vampire thing. It's more of a demons thing. And he happens upon some fellers that rape
It's Gallo Walker, so that's where the gallows where they hang people.
Right. And these men are souls that didn't go to they're in a purgatory state.
So it's like Ghost Rider?
Kind of. It's like Ghost Rider, Blade, and Unforgiven all mixed up in one badass deal. Honestly, this movie is beautifully shot by someone named Andrew Goff, who I'd never heard of before. This movie was stuck in its own purgatory for quite a while with Snipes' tax problems and went unreleased for 6 years. It's available now on Netflix streaming, and I highly recommend it to anyone that likes Westerns, like genre films, or just likes beautifully shot movies. It has some problems story-wise. In the third act, I think there was some post-production tinkering going on there, maybe without Snipes' presence, because he disappears real quick, real quick. But it's really well executed up to that point and shot absolutely beautifully. So I think anybody that likes Snipes at all should check this out. Highly recommend it, including you. I know you like the horror genre too, and there's some good makeup effects.
Check it out.
It really is nice. Yeah. What is Hector in the Search for Happiness?
This is that Simon Pegg movie where he goes on a search for happiness, and his name's Hector.
Well, how is it?
It's pretty good. He plays a psychiatrist who is unhappy in life and is unsure necessarily how to make his patients happy anymore. So he goes on a search for happiness, only to a couple places. He really doesn't go around the world. He goes to like Africa, China, and L.A., and that's it. But it was pretty good. It reminded me a lot of I won't be able to remember.
Which one?
But
that one?
That one. The one, you know, the one, you know, the one. No, one. Walter Mitty.
Oh,
not nearly as good, but it's not an imaginative thing. You know, he's not imagining. He's actually going on things, and it gets pretty down on him. I don't know. He gets the shit kicked out of him quite a bit. I don't know.
It's a small movie though, right? It's kind of a small, quaint little film.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's The Babadook?
The Babadook?
Yes. What is this?
This is a horror movie, Australian horror movie, I believe, about single mother who her husband died while taking her to the hospital to give birth to their son, and their son is, this takes place several years after that. Son, I don't know, it's maybe like 10 or something. But he's a bit kooky. He's a little crazy. So is she. But she reads him this bedtime story, this book called The Babadook. And it's basically this demon thing that sneaks out of the closet and kills kids, you know, and scares the kid and then, you know, becomes real, kind of.
Hey, these Australian horror flicks can be fucking frightening. Wolf Creek freaked me out
people,
when I first saw
it. Yeah, it's not like that. People really liked this. I didn't like it because it's a bit of a bit bait and switch. It's not a monster movie. It's a psychological thriller.
Okay, then that's not fair. You're not playing by the rules, man.
Yeah, so I was led to believe it was something else. But the Essie Davis, who plays the main character, and it really gives a great performance as the mom going mad. But yeah, I don't know.
I was led to believe there'd be food at this party. There's only pigs in a blanket, and I'm not having it.
It wasn't. I was a little taken aback by that, but it's very well directed, well shot. You know, if they had not tried to fool me, maybe I would have liked it better.
Should have been a little more forthcoming.
Yeah, that's what I think. I mean, you want to make it, if you tell me something is a monster movie and I'm like, I want to watch a monster movie and I pick your movie to watch and it's not really a monster movie. It's more of like this, the first act is like has nothing to do with the Babadook. It's like this drama of this mom dealing with her fucked up crazy kid. And the fact that her husband's been dead. So take that as you will. A lot of people have really liked it. You know, it's streaming on Netflix. It's free, pretty much. So I say give it a go. Watch it if you like horror movies.
Which was what Wolf Cop was, which I kind of slandered on our last shop, our Wolf last Cop. Show.
Yeah.
And you liked it.
I love Wolf Cop.
Really?
C budget B movie thing that I thought was very fun, funny, and I liked it a lot. It reminded me a lot of Buffy. That kind of stuff, you know. It's obviously I'm not giving it too much. It's really a thing. You either like these kinds of movies or you don't.
But I liked Sergeant Kabuki Man and some of the trauma stuff, which I thought was a lot funner.
I'm telling you right now, go watch those again. A lot funner. Go watch those again. And then compare them to this. They're damn near the same. If not, a lot of the trauma stuff is worse than this.
Well, really. This is brand new, so I just didn't see the sense of humor.
This is brand new. Would you like to see some of the newer trauma stuff? It's even worse.
Trauma lives in my memory forever.
Yeah, trauma's pretty bad when it comes to anything storytelling-wise.
Trauma's pretty bad when it comes to anything.
It's true. You know, they've had some hits in the past, but those really do live in the past.
Lloyd Kaufman is going to headbutt you.
That's fine with me. He's better than trauma. He's better than that.
Yeah,
I've read his books. He really is, but I guess he's not. I don't know.
You are recommending
Wolf Cop. I liked it. If you're into weird stuff, if you like, you know, the offbeat, weird 80s, you know, Alamo Drafthouse type shit, you would like it.
Yeah, but they picked some fucking losers, too. Remember Miami Connection? That was terrible. Which everyone shot their load over. Oh, this fucking hybrid we found.
Yeah.
Stretch, though. I want to see Stretch. This has been on our Netflix queue for about a year now, and everyone keeps telling me how good this Joe Carnahan flick is.
I didn't believe it either. It took me a long time to see this. This movie's fucking awesome.
I keep hearing this over and over.
Oh, my God. It's really quite unbelievably amazing. So Patrick Wilson basically plays Stretch, but he's a lot like the gambler, you know? He's just a dude that is at the end of his fucking rope, you know? Patrick Wilson's so damn likable, and he's so cool.
Always, yeah.
Ed Helms plays this guy kind of in his head in a way, but this whole, you have to watch. I can't tell you the whole fucking story because there's so much that happens in this. It's a one night story. It's he owes a debt to his bookie, like $6,000. He's got to find a way to get this money. He's a stretch limo driver, but he wants to be an actor, but he's, you know, long since pretty much given up on that dream. And he takes this insane job where he's promised a $6,000 tip by this just insane billionaire. And he goes on this insane adventure, you know, one night adventure thing. I told you it was a lot like After Hours, obviously more action oriented, but similar to that.
And I love these movies that take place over one evening. Like an adventure at one night that changes somebody, and navigating this the crazy city and the characters that come with the territory, much like After Hours and things like that. And I love the fact that Carnahan is gone back and done something kind of small scale after the A-Team and some of these bigger follies he had. Although I like The Gray quite a bit. I know you didn't care for it as much.
Kind of dumb.
But I keep hearing unanimously that the stretch is just awesome, and now you say it too. So
it's surprisingly good, man. Check it out. If you like action movies, it's worth it. Well, extremely well directed. Everyone's good. I mean, it has a lot of people in it.
So what are you picking then for your online pick of the week? A lot of choices here in your reviews.
There's a documentary out there called Showrunners, which is about television showrunners right now on Netflix.
That's a great documentary. Yes.
I would say to watch that, if not just to glean what you can from Joss Whedon.
But we could all glean a little bit more from him because his skill is magnificent.
Yeah, some brilliant stuff in there.
My pick is Gallo Walker, the Wesley Snipes Western horror flick, a little genre mashup there. So if you're in the mood for a documentary or a Western horror genre mashup, those are our picks for the week. Let's take a quick break, and we'll come back with the Trailer Attic portion of today's show.
We'll just go to Trailer Attic.
All right, let's do that too.
Trailers can be wondrous things, giving us insight into the unseen movies of the future. But when they're bad, fire photon torpedoes. Shields up, red alert. Prepare for Trailer Addict.
I don't know if the shields can handle Chris Hemsworth's torpedo.
Wow.
In the Vacation.
You just
trailer.
Torpedoed the show. So this Vacation reboot gets a Red Band trailer today. And it really tries, I think, hard to integrate itself with the original and also distance itself from the original at the same time. And I think it's only moderately successful at doing that. I really didn't think this was that great of a trailer.
I thought it was a great trailer. I think it looks good. I want to see it. Looks funny. Looks like a happy-go-lucky kind of movie. I would watch this and I think quite enjoy it.
I just felt like the bits were borrowed. The kids talking shit from Ricky Bobby. Hemsworth doing his thing from Date Night when Wahlberg did that. I just thought like a couple of these things are...
That's fine.
Even the red Ferrari Trans Am getting smashed up. Mm-hmm. I didn't like a lot of what I saw on screen here. Maybe it's a movie. Maybe they're holding the best stuff. Mm-hmm. It'll play better. But I just didn't care for this trailer.
I liked it.
All right, well, there are differing opinions on the comedy aspect.
I liked it.
They said that I did like the rim job thing. I thought that was cute. Strangely enough, the rim job joke is what got me.
Yeah,
exactly. So this Magic Mike finally gets a feature trailer. This isn't a Red Band trailer. We should note that, but this is a feature trailer after the teaser we saw a couple months back. And I thought the teaser was, it shot well enough and edited together well enough to sell the idea. And I'm really thinking that this trailer is just subpar. This thing looks not very good to me.
It's really not much. It's a teaser trailer.
I think it looks.
It is. Why? How is this a real trailer? Well, it's not, right? It doesn't tell you anything about.
Doesn't tell you anything. I think they're being glib with the whole marketing and where we're going to show you the best parts, and it's too much now. You know, it was kind of funny and kind of slick before, but now I think it's...
Well, the good thing about the original Magic Mike was that it was a real movie, right? There was a story, it was a real movie, you liked the characters. Is that in this? I don't know. Maybe. I can see glimpses of it, but mostly we're focusing on the hard bodies, which I don't know. Is that what they considered sold tickets on the first one?
Apparently so, because people that went in there expecting a real movie or didn't want a real movie got a real movie. So maybe they were afraid that that's going to turn them off this time, so they're just giving them the bodies. But I'm just waiting for something that resembles or even looks like something that was in the first movie. This doesn't really have any sort of personality of its own yet. And the first one had a strong personality, but that's Soderbergh's imprint too as a filmmaker on that material.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe there's not much you can do after you get rid of him.
Yeah. So this is like the class project follow-up.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Black Mass, this Johnny Depp thriller, crime thriller, starring as Whitey Bulger. This finally gets a trailer here, and it's a long trailer. Really, the majority of this is set with one set piece at a dinner table. It's a very reminiscent scene, I thought, of Joe Pesci's kind of standoff with Henry Hill in Goodfellas. I thought, you know, the kind of the why am I funny scene. I got the vibe I got out of this. People were instantly raving, saying Depp, you know, for next year for best actor. Well, I think this looks intriguing. I didn't see that at all. Do you? Do you think this looks that gripping?
No, it looks good. I'll watch it. Is it fair to say Depp for best actor? Probably not. I mean, well, they put some makeup on him and that was it. Like, give me a break. Let's, you know, pump the brakes. Let's see the damn movie first. But I mean, writing wise, you know, the fake out kind of thing is I'm a bit done with already. Right. The whole get him going. Right. Like make him worried like he might kill him. And then look at this guy.
Right.
So, all right. Yeah, it's not funny. It's stupid. I've seen it a million times. And if that's what this has to offer beyond that, then I don't know. Probably won't make much of a splash.
Well, Bulger's story is intriguing, but there's documentaries, and there's some on Netflix right now that you can watch that are, if you want the story. So what I got out of this is thinking, well, this probably isn't even going to be as good as Donnie Brasco or The Departed, which Nicholson was basically playing Bulger back then. So it's got a lot of stiff competition, even including Depp's own Public Enemies, which is a great gangster flick. So there's a lot of competition for this movie in what it sets out to achieve.
Stiff competition from Chris Hemsworth in Vacation as well.
There you go. Hey, you can't get that Hemsworth image out of your mind, huh?
Woo!
I thought they would store somewhere else there. Let's talk about your boy Vin Diesel here. Last Witch Hunter. He's going to once again strike out on his own away from the Furious franchise.
Strike out's the right fucking word.
This looks fucking terrible.
What? I want to see this so badly. It looks absolutely horrendous. What is wrong with it? This looks just like my kind of movie. I love this. When they overspent, they took a B movie that should be on the Sci-Fi Channel. And they spent, way too much money on it.
Which is what he always gets them to do somehow.
Well, I know. That's what I'm saying. How does he not learn from past movies? Not do this.
He gets he's
this is a career ender. You're on a career high right now. If they literally, which would be pretty amazing, if they decided not to make another Fast and Furious movie in the end, this would end his career.
Yeah. This is Babylon AD all over again. This is Riddick all over again. This looks horrendous. This looks like Aeon Flux without the cool visuals.
You reminded me of that too. I know.
I'm watching this going derivative, well, derivative, 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 derivative. Yeah. I don't even want to see this. I feel like
so
I've seen it.
So he's a witch hunter and there's some witches and he hunts them.
And he's the last of his kind.
And that's the movie, by the way.
Yeah. This is Dracula Untold mixed with every other one of these fucking things. Remember,
Frankenstein?
I mean, yes.
Let's just keep it moving, yeah. Yeah, it's pretty incredible that he would be in this.
It's incredible that it's got bankrolled. But I think
it's directed. Well, you know who it's directed by, right?
No.
It's Eisner's kid. It's Breck Eisner. So that's how it got bankrolled.
Our boy from Sahara?
But yeah, the guy who overspends that we do know who overspends like a son of a bitch.
This movie got made. Daddy,
but I tell you, yeah, I know. But I don't know.
That means the reported budget on this will be $50 million and the actual budget will be closer to $200 million. This thing's a goddamn tax shelter. I just can't believe this movie's getting made in 2015. I really can't. I probably will watch this just because it snuck out to theaters somehow.
Yeah, I do want to see it. I like these really bad movies, at least to watch them once. Even Babylon AD. I enjoy watching it and then hating it later. And hating myself later.
I've seen Battle of AD way too many times for how bad it is, because it's, and every time I watch it, I like parts of it, and then I go, okay.
Yeah, I know.
And then it runs into a fucking wall, and you go, this story makes no sense. Why are they doubling back? Like, what is going on here? You're revisiting the same people. Oh, what do we got next?
Chocolate rain.
Yes, it's raining men, as in raisinettes, I guess. So, because this is the black version, for better or lack of a term, to Magic Mike. This stars Michael Chad White. This is Tyson Beckford. A lot of people you've seen in other stuff. So this is kind of the B movie version of Magic
about
Mike
a
too.
College student who, you know, needs money. Obviously, he's a college student, and he runs into the owner of a strip club and convinces him to dance.
This looks exactly like the kind of movie I feared Magic Mike would have been.
Oh yeah, this is super cheap. I mean, this is, I mean, for starters, Carmen Electra's in this movie.
Yeah.
So that gives you an idea of how cheap this is.
That's how awesome it is. That's how awesome fucking fantasy this is.
That's how you know this is the biggest piece of crap in the world. But yeah, poor Michael Jai White. Why is he in this?
Why is he? I mean, he's in great shape, so obviously they're using him for his body and the dancing, that kind of stuff. But he deserves so much better than this. He's such a talented actor and a good martial artist and just a good screen presence. I mean, doesn't deserve to be stuck in it. And Vivica A. Fox is in this, and which
I
just
bet
cracks
this
me
up. You have to have a bet, though, that this makes money, right?
Yeah, there's a market for this for
makes
sure.
Money, yeah.
Especially because it's going to ride the coattails of Magic Mike. You can play off the fact that it's their quote-unquote urban version, but it really it's the B-movie version of Magic Mike. But it looks like what the Magic Mike 1 would have been like if Soderbergh hadn't have been there guiding it into some sort of artistic respectability. Which is funny when you say that term.
This is coming out before Magic Mike.
Yeah, but that's just because it's jumping on the bandwagon hype. We know that because we interviewed Jai White. He said that.
Well then, yeah. Well, Jason was on set.
Yeah, exactly.
I request an on-set interview only, please.
I thought they said we were going to Detroit. We turned up in Chocolate City. I don't know what the fuck happened.
Hey.
So playing it cool.
Something I don't ever do very well.
Which is basically the reunion of Captain America and Falcon. It looks like. Did you see that in this trailer?
Yeah. What is this?
This looks like a strange romantic comedy about Chris Evans, who plays a screenwriter.
Have they been holding this for a while? I mean,
Because this has gone through three or four major title changes.
Well, it's got a great cast, but I'm still confused as to how crummy it looks.
I know somebody that's seen this, because this is available on a pay-per-view right now on demand, and she said it was okay. I got kind of a two-star review from her, it sounded like. So, you know, and that's the target audience, I'm thinking, or at least demographic-wise. So this, to me, reminded me of, remember The Rebound, that Catherine Zeta-Jones flick that came out a couple years ago?
Yeah.
It kind of in that, like, playing for keeps even. Like, why is this not bigger, you know, with this cast and this... This trailer, it looks like it could be a fun little
film. Hey, Patrick Warburton's in it.
Well, there it's a hit. Love me some Warburton. I mean, Topher Grace.
Oh, shit, Topher. I love the pronunciation of names that you got going on there, buddy.
You love it, huh? I give you more all night.
Topher Grace.
It's my boy Taffy. anyway, Anthony Mackie's in this. Your boy Falcon.
Right, Anthony Mackie, Chris Evans, but Michelle Monaghan, who I love, Aubrey Plaza, I like Martin Starr, I like. You know, I do like Topher Grace. Patrick Warburton already said. You know, Luke Wilson's in this.
Luke Wilson. Yeah, you're a big fan of Luke Wilson.
I'm a big fan of Luke Wilson.
You like Luke Wilson?
I do like Luke Wilson. I didn't know I was a big fan. I mean, I'm probably the only one in the fan club.
You and Owen Wilson are big fans of Luke Wilson.
Okay? Yeah.
Out of the Wilson brothers, you'll take Luke. Even Ian Gufford, which is really strange because if you look at this, you have basically three superheroes in this. You got Mr. Fantastic, you got Johnny Storm / Captain America, and Falcon to complete our superhero analogy.
Well, and excuse me, The Tick is also in this.
Holy shit, how could I forget that?
I'm The Tick. All right.
The trailer.
So what are we saying? I mean, this is just, I don't know what this is. This is odd to me, really. I would just have expected Chris Evans to be beyond this, but I guess he's still within reach of stuff like this.
Nah, this looks just right up his wheelhouse. He has an affliction for doing these shitty rom-coms. I mean, look at Nanny Diaries and What's Your Number.
Yeah, but that was a long time ago.
And What's Your Number wasn't that long ago.
Oh, no, What's Your Number wasn't, you're right. But I'm talking about Nanny Diaries was quite a bit of a while ago.
Yeah, you're right. You're right on that. But he's also doing another one called Be Cool, I want to say, or something like that, where he wrote and directed it. So he is making his writing and directing debut.
Is that a remake of Be Cool, the sequel to
Get Shorty?
It's Shorty, yeah.
I forgot that movie even existed. My goodness. That is a movie that is just inconsequential as shit. Be Cool. My goodness. And people actually paid to see that at one point. Like, people
I remember when that came out. Yeah, I was working in the video store and stuff. And that was all over the fucking place. I was like, nobody cares.
Video store. That's how long ago that was. You were working at the video store. Let's go ahead and bring this one home tonight.
Are we done yet? Yeah,
it's been a little unwieldy.
Good Lord, been on for an hour and 15 now.
Oh, we're just roaming on the airwaves.
I think
tonight.
We're good.
We want to thank you all for joining us out there from Zimbabwe to New Zealand. All these emails we get, and it's pretty crazy how many of you out there listening. So we want to thank you all for your continued listenership, and thank you guys, and invite you to go to moviemavericks.com and check out movie reviews or past podcasts. Rate the show on iTunes, follow us on Facebook, do all that kind of social media work for us, please. Speaking for Trevor Anderson, I'm Jason Ruger, and we, of course, are the Movie Mavericks.
Oh my, another magnificent episode has come to an end. If you're craving more, set your destination to moviemavericks.com, warp 9. Engage!